If you want to take a look, sure. Just the classes. Uh-huh, you bet. Again, this is SBC versus H. Michael Cutler. Bron?
Good morning.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jason Bruneau, here on behalf of appellant.
Excuse me, I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
That's okay. Here on behalf of appellant SBC, who I will refer to for simplicity just as Harris. We are here today. District Court erred in not piercing the corporate veil to hold William Cutler responsible for a $160,000 judgment that was owed by related two sheriffs. That judgment has gone unpaid because literally every cent of related investments money went to personally benefit William and his family. That fact is undisputed. We believe the evidence overwhelmingly establishes each of the factors that are considered in justifying piercing the corporate veil. I will discuss each of those factors. The first is diversion of corporate funds for personal purposes.
Well, don't first and foremost you have to have a shareholder?
No, absolutely not. The Nebraska Supreme Court has determined in the Medlock versus Medlock case and rejected the very argument relied upon district court that a person needs to be a shareholder to be held accountable for the debts of the corporation. Very same argument was made as Mr. Houghton's going to make, and it was rejected. And it makes sense, because in order for somebody to do what William Cutler do, which is use a company as a mere facade to defraud creditors, all they have to do is simply not name themselves as a shareholder. Well, that's kind of backwards, because it's the failure to follow corporate formalities that justifies piercing the corporate veil. It doesn't immunize somebody who did what Mr. Cutler did. It's the justification for holding them responsible. In this case, if you look, Mr. Cutler, even though he allegedly wasn't a shareholder, he controlled all of related investments' money. $145,000 was the only asset related investments ever owned. He showed up at Sheriff's office.
If I can just interrupt.
Sure, Your Honor.
Hand in hand with the prior question goes the issue of control.
Yes.
Exercising control over the corporation. And I think you're heading down that road of what indicia is there in the record that Mr. Cutler exercised this control?
Overwhelming evidence of control. He handled every single penny of related investments money. There's a $145,000 check from Sheriff's, and he controlled it the entire time. He took it. He opened up a bank account. He was the only guy. He held himself out as president and CFO of related investments. He entered into a purchase agreement.
Can we back up? What are the circumstances surrounding the money, first of all?
The money.
This is the $145,000 that came out of the proceeds from the Twin Tower sale?
No. We argue otherwise.
Well,
they're going to argue that, but it's
That's Mr. Houghton's position.
Yes. Okay. Ours is there's a promissory note that's in evidence that equated to a judgment. For some reason, the client wanted that money delivered to Mr. Cutler, which happened.
$145,000.
Yes. $145,000 that William Cutler physically picked up from Sheriff's office, walked over to Enterprise Bank, which is right across the parking lot, and he turned that into a $101,000 cashier's check to related investments. Undisputed that William Cutler controlled all of that money.
What did Mr. Cutler have to say as far as his explanation concerning that transaction?
Mr. Cutler's explanation was, well, I signed the document and I don't know anything else. Completely and utterly inefficient.
Wasn't his explanation that money, it was intended to be paid to him because of debts owed by Michael Cutler to him, and that was the understanding of all parties
here? I don't think William Cutler ever made that explanation in his deposition. That was Michael Cutler's position. Our position is different, but regardless, it doesn't matter why the underlying money was paid. It's undisputed in this case that there was a debt owed by related investments. There was a judgment entered that can't be collaterally attacked in the underlying proceedings, which is one of the problems.
But that judgment was as to Michael Cutler.
No, that was against related investments.
Michael Cutler and related, or just related?
Just related investments. And that's the issue. The reason that wasn't paid is because all of the money that related investments ever owned, it's undisputed, was controlled by William Cutler. He was the only signatory on the bank account that he opened.
But that money didn't get paid. That $145,000 was paid to William Cutler personally,
exactly.
Right? And the only money that I recall seeing in either the briefs or the record is $101,000 that was paid to Related.
No, if William Cutler got that check. It stemmed from the $145,000. There was a cashier's check taken out of that, issued by Enterprise Bank to William Cutler for $101,000. The other $44,000 is in evidence that went to things like Granite for Mr. Cutler and his family.
And the $101,000 went into which account?
It went into a UBS account at Related Investments that Mr. Cutler owns, and he admits to signing the authorization for that document. That's Exhibit 76. So every single, the only way any money of Related Investments could have ever come out of Related Investments was with Mr. Cutler's signature. Let me tell you what happened to that $101,000.
Well, maybe let's just back up
sure.
for a sec. It seems like one of the most important pieces of evidence here is the deposition of Mr. Cutler.
That's one important piece, yes.
And what we're talking about in that deposition, there's a lot of talk about financial transactions that have to do with the $101,000. Well, the $145,000, right?
Yes.
And
actually, Your Honor, it all has to do with $101,000. It all has to do with $101,000.
I'm sorry. Yes. The $101,000 that came out of the $145,000.
Correct.
Right. And with the exception of one or two of the financial transactions, Mr. Cutler said those weren't his signatures. He has no knowledge of it.
Yeah, that's correct.
And those are issues of credibility, correct?
Somewhat they're issues of credibility. I mean, but the bottom line is Mr. Cutler had control. They could only come out of that account with his knowledge or consent.
Well, if these, you know, these various, I'm looking at the record, these various transactions that took place, he said time and time again, he says, that's not my signature, that's not my signature. I don't know what it was for.
But not on all of them, Your Honor.
Not on all of them.
Exhibit 66, which I have blown up in front of you, mm-hmm. $55,000 that was taken out of Related Investments account and paid toward a personal obligation of William and Michael Cutler. Mr. Cutler admits that he authorized that document, and that document right there justifies piercing the corporate veil, and it certainly requires the vacation of the sanction against Sherritz that was entered.
That's only if the... evidence has established that that was money that belonged to Related Investments and wasn't otherwise William Cutler's money to do it as he wished.
It was clearly Related Investments money because it came out of their account.
What involvement did William Cutler have in any decision related to even the incorporation other than being in attendance at one meeting? There is no evidence of corporate documents, are there, in which he signed or was issued stock or anything to that effect?
No, and that's the problem. That's why. One of the circumstances to justify the piercing of the corporate veil is if corporate formalities are not followed. The fact that they didn't do that doesn't insulate him. It makes him liable. But the guy signed a $1.3 million option contract on behalf of Related.
What if it had been my name put on those documents that are unexecuted? That mean then... I could be liable? That's significant that nothing was executed except the articles of incorporation.
Not without anything further, you're correct. But he did things further. He signed a $1.3 million option contract on behalf of Related Investments.
And what was his explanation for doing that?
He said, I didn't know what the document was, which isn't satisfactory. If you look at this court's decision, a general rule, every person of mature age able to read and write who has an opportunity to read an instrument and execute the same is presumed to know the contents of the instrument signed and is a stop from denying the contents thereof. If you go further, Your Honor, $26,700 was taken out of that Related account and put toward Mr. Cutler and his wife's credit cards. $9,000 was a personal check made to him that was cashed. It's not credible for him to come in here and say, well, I didn't know anything about somebody paying off my credit card.
Counsel, time is short. So the attorney's fees, could you address that?
I don't think there's any basis, Your Honor. Even if the district court was correct in finding there wasn't sufficient evidence to pierce the corporate veil, to find that the claim is frivolous isn't correct. Number one, the judge incorrectly thought that you needed to be a shareholder to pierce the corporate veil, so it should be vacated right there. But more importantly, there's nothing frivolous. Sherritz had a judgment. It didn't get paid because the money undisputedly went to William Cutler and his family. And there are documents that bear William Cutler's signature, whether or not he signed them or not. So for Mr. Sheritz to come in here and file suit based on all of these documents signed by William Cutler, to say that's frivolous, frankly, is not right. I mean, to sit there and say that, well, there just wasn't sufficient evidence to go as far as piercing the corporate veil is one thing. But to issue a $150,000 sanction in this case when the guy admits to taking $55,000 out of Related's account to pay down a loan for him and his son, it isn't based on any facts.
You have an assigned error related to the attorney's fees concerning the an exhibit.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem is they tried to submit an affidavit for me to rebut it, and the court said, well, that's untimely. That's not permitted. And she did that based on discovery responses that were served, and we think that's clear error because 30 days hadn't run. Our obligation to respond hadn't occurred yet. But yet the court excluded the evidence on that basis, and we think that's improper. But we don't think there's any basis for the sanction. We would ask that the court reverse, enter judgment in favor of Sheritz. And I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Houghton, good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Counsel, my name is David Houghton, and it's been my privilege to represent William Cutler, Jr. during his life in this matter and then his estate after he died. He was deceased at the time of trial. With me today are his two children, Kate and William III. This case, as you have noted, is an effort to pierce the corporate veil, and it requires that the defendant be a shareholder.
Can you address how Medlock plays into that?
Medlock is a non-profit corporation. They don't have shareholders. Medlock was about in a divorce, and it was this person using a non-profit corporation and in control of it to the extent that it could be used as marital property. The court could see it as marital property, see that motorcycles, I think, were in there, other assets were in there that were being used, money came out for personal expenses, and the court looked in the divorce and said, appellate court said, you can look at it as marital property. I think the lower court thought they couldn't look at it. So it's an entirely different case. That's not even a piercing the corporate veil case. Point. Never has there been a piercing the corporate veil case where it's not against a shareholder, and that makes all the sense in the world. The corporate form is there to protect the owners from personal liability. So if it's protect the owners from personal liability, you have to be an owner to have that protection. You're going to pierce the corporate veil, you pierce it to the owners.
Mr. Houghton, you heard me mention the deposition of
yes.
Mr. Cutler. You're familiar with the record. What we're talking about here is a question of credibility, and that was decided adverse to the appellants. And in sum, it looks like what was going on here is Michael was using his father for various financial reasons, at least according to the depositions that are in the record.
I think that's fair.
I mean, even the exhibit over here, the $55,000 check, wasn't that a debt that was part Michael's?
It was essentially Michael's, I think. His father had guaranteed it at the bank, and this was... And Michael said to Sheritz, I'm going to assign the proceeds of this to pay off my dad.
$145,000.
Yeah, I'm going to give him the money so he can pay off, so I can pay off my dad and he can take care of the American National Bank. Sheritz knew all that. He knew every bit of that at this time. And it's important, Your Honors, that these checks came out of the trust account. Sheritz really thought it was his. And he was going to make a loan of his money to some company that should have come out of the trust account, should have paid tax on it, should have had a 1099 to himself, and should have then given a loan out of that. This came directly out of settlement proceeds, which at one point Michael says, I'm assigning to my dad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assign it to him. So the other point is the fact that someone filed a document with the Secretary of State that says, you now have the right to have this corporation it's not a corporation make. You have to have subscription agreements. You have to start it. You have to breathe life into the corporation. There was no evidence that ever happened here.
Well, all the corporate documents that do exist are just blank, aren't they, as far as...
Totally blank. They were forms that were prepared that were never filled out.
So what's the person's remedy? if the corporation was never formed, but someone, and I'm not saying that Mr. Cutler did, but someone holds themselves out to be a shareholder of the corporation.
Seems to me that a person's remedy is the same as it would be in the pre-incorporator status. So if someone's out doing pre-incorporation work, you sue the pre-incorporator personally for whatever they did. In this case, that didn't happen. I wish it had happened, frankly, because then we could talk about the underlying debt, the default judgment, and we could attack that directly. But and I think this court can actually look at that because cases are very clear that you look at the totality of the circumstances of piercing the corporate veil. Not did somebody do something wrong, but it would be unfair to this particular plaintiff. And in this case, Sheretz came up with this whole scheme to advance his credit. The fact that he was a creditor of Michael, he was trying to advance his credit vis-a-vis the IRS and vis-a-vis the American National Bank. He wanted to make sure he got paid, and he knew there were other creditors out there that would suck up the $300,000 in the settlement.
Well, ostensibly, that's the reason for the corporation, right?
Well, he came up with that plan, and he says he admitted on the stand. I talked to him many times. There's a letter where he virtually threatens, if we don't come to some deal on this, then it's all going to go public, and I'm going to sue you, and the IRS is going to be after you, and the American National Bank is going to be after you, so you better do it my way. And so we don't know what was in Michael's mind.
Mr. Houck,
not here. He was never deposed.
Can you clarify something Mr. Bruno said? The $101,000, mm-hmm. I thought I read that was a cashier's check from Sheretz to Related Investments, but Mr. Bruno said it was actually a check from William Cutler that went into the UBS account as opposed to a cashier's check from the Sheretz firm? You don't recall?
I don't recall whether it was a cashier's check or not.
Because my understanding is on December 7th of 06, the $145,000 check paid from Sheretz went directly to William Cutler. And then on 12-8, a cashier's check from Sheretz was paid to Related Investments for $101,000.
Right. I think the point that the court's trying to make is that it would only be the $101,000 we would be talking about.
Yes.
$145,000
right.
We would be talking about.
Right. Right.
And we don't know where that money went. And I would tell you that the record is also clear. Bill Jr.'s son, Bill III, who worked with him, they were partners together, and Bill Jr. worked upright up until the day he died. They were partners together. He said, my dad was never in Florida, and a lot of these bills came from Florida, and that's where Michael was. And I don't know what Michael did. I am not here defending what Michael did. He may have used his dad's name. It certainly is apparent to me that that's what happened. He may have gotten a credit card in his dad's name, may have had accounts in his dad's name. Who knows?
What is the worst evidence against William Cutler that he had any control with regard to Related Investments?
Worst?
The worst.
He actually signed, I think he signed the option agreement his son asked him to sign. Didn't know what he said. I didn't know what I was signing. I trusted my son. That would be the worst. But the option agreement was an asset in any event. It was even Sheretz tried to get into the option agreement. He said he had half the value because of the contingent fee agreement, and he said he had half of the value of that. But when it was clear that Michael wasn't going to be able to take advantage of it, he said, that's worth $1 million, $1.2 million. And he actually tried to get in there and said, I'm going to take it from my account because I have an interest in it.
Well, and that's where Michael pushes back a bit.
Yeah.
Could you address the attorney's fees issue?
Yes. We asked for them. As this court probably knows, attorneys ask for these only rarely. We asked for them, Your Honors, because I couldn't answer the question, how does Sheretz get away with this kind of stuff? And that question was asked of me. How does he come up with a scheme to defraud creditors and then put together a scheme, get a default judgment without ever giving notice to William Cutler, going through the process of early discovery, taking his deposition, hearing that only one of all the signatures they had, he said, was mine, and he explained why he did that. And then watching Michael die, watching William Jr. die and having the case revived only against William Jr. and then having hearing after hearing after hearing on discovery motions, asking for sanctions then, hearing all the excuses about work on computers, we don't have this, we don't keep this. And then when Judge Stratman finally said, enough, I'm going to find an inference that you've destroyed evidence. I can't believe you've got all of this going on with Michael Cutler and you can't find the records. And she says, I'm going to give the defendant an inference because of spoliation. Then they come up with 37 boxes, they say, of documents. And then they come to this court, or come to the district court, and in opening statement say, he wasn't a shareholder. And then they put on Jim Sherritz for literally almost 2 days, where when this court reviews the record, the only conclusion you can come to is that there is a serious problem with lack of candor. Mr. Sherritz tried to put this thing together, didn't come together the way he wanted it to. And if I may finish, and then he tried to recreate it out of whole cloth on the witness stand. And we said enough is enough. We asked the district court to do that, and I asked this court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Helton. Thank you, Mr. Bruno. You're excused. That ends the morning session of the Court of Appeals.